Parks, good morning to you.
Mr. Chief Justice, your honors. May it please the court, my name is Anna Marks. I represent the state of Nebraska appellant in this matter. I'm before the court today asking the court to find that the lower court erred in appointing counsel in a child support action. This was a case where the appellee had executed a notarized signed paternity.
Is your claim of error that counsel was appointed or that the state is being forced to pay for counsel?
Both, your honor.
Doesn't the court have an inherent right to appoint counsel?
Well, as it's been noted, I believe Hess v. State pointed out the fact that there are civil cases in Nebraska law, there is not.
But that goes to public expense, isn't it?
Correct, Your Honor.
So isn't the heart of your argument appointment of counsel at public expense?
At the crux of the issue would be at the public expense,
okay.
Yes, Your Honor. The state's position is that a notarized acknowledgement was signed. It existed. The district court referee in the initial hearing with appellee had told appellee upon his request for court-appointed counsel that he, pursuant to Nebraska law, did not have the right to court-appointed counsel because paternity was not an issue. After that, the appellee said that he indeed did sign the paternity acknowledgement, but at the time he signed it, he did not realize what he was signing. And so over the state's objection, the referee did appoint counsel in this matter. The state did file a motion to reconsider. That hearing was heard in chambers before the district court judge, who found that court-appointed counsel should remain because paternity was at issue. The case progressed on after some time. The parties did come to a stipulation and a final order was entered wherein the appellee was found to be the father of the minor child. Support was ordered. Subsequent to that, appellee's counsel did file a motion for the county to pay the court-appointed county attorney fees. The state appeared at that hearing and did request to have a hearing on the record. However, the district court judge refused that request. So a hearing was had in chambers, at which time...
So what's the significance of that?
Your Honor, I do believe that the significance is the state specifically requested to have the hearing on the record so that the evidence would be before the court as to what the court's ruling would be in regards to granting court-appointed counsel fees.
Well, I'm not sure I understand. You're saying you wish to have had an evidentiary hearing, but there was none?
Your Honor, we did ask for a hearing on the record so that there would be more evidence to present to the appellate courts in regards to the granting of the counsel fees. At the crux of the issue was that the district court...
Is there any problem with the fact that we have an order as a perhaps issue of law? Entitlement to fees at public expense. We know what the ruling is. Not sure what evidence you would have wished to have made of record.
Your Honor, I do believe part of the issue, and the court may disagree with me, is part of the issue in this case today was that the district court found that paternity had not been established through that paternity acknowledgement. And that was the basis for the district court saying that there was a right to court-appointed counsel fees because this was a paternity matter. It's the state's position very strongly that this was not a paternity matter. Because the acknowledgement existed. And so in not having that record from that hearing at the court-appointed counsel fees, I believe that's the evidence that would have been clear to this court is that the district court judge found court-appointed counsel fees were granted because paternity was at issue.
The state's position is that this was a support case and it never morphed into a paternity case?
Correct, Your Honor. I do believe that the statute as well as case law is clear that a notarized acknowledgement, if not rescinded or set aside, is a legal finding of paternity. There are further statutes that address...
Is it a rebuttable presumption?
When the paternity acknowledgement is first signed, the statute does say it's a rebuttable presumption. The statute further goes on to state that after that timeframe, which is 60 days for rescission, that that then becomes a legal finding. In this court's case, in Cesar v. Alicia, this court specifically found that the existence of that paternity acknowledgement was, in fact, a legal finding of paternity, and that court, that case never should have addressed paternity.
But even after the rescission period, doesn't the statute contemplate a means to challenge it in the instances of fraud, duress, or material mistake of fact?
Correct. The statute does say that there is a means to disestablish paternity. However, the statute specifically says that all legal obligations, including child support, shall remain during that challenge.
If there's no child support in place, why is that relevant?
I believe it's relevant to speak to the fact that paternity was at all times in existence in this case.
But not child support?
Child support had not been established.
Y'all went in for child support.
I'm sorry, what's that?
That the case was filed seeking child
Correct.
Support, right? So
yes.
Wouldn't it be consistent to say child support was in place when we sought to create it?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
So wasn't Julio G. claiming fraud or something here?
It's my understanding he was claiming material mistake of fact. He told the district court referee that he acknowledged having signed it, but that he didn't, English was not his primary language, and so he was misled by the mother as to why he signed it. And that was all in oral statements. There had never been a filing at that point challenging it. Even if there had been written documentation or a petition to challenge that paternity acknowledgement, paternity still existed. It was still there because that paternity acknowledgement is considered to be a legal finding based upon statute as well as case law in Cesar v. Alicia.
Is it the state's position that the father didn't sufficiently raise a claim of fraud, duress, or material mistake?
It's the state's position that, yes, initially he did not properly raise that.
What should he have done differently?
I do believe that there would need to be a proper filing alleging establishing what the basis of that is. However, even if he had filed that, it's the state's position that paternity was established, that paternity acknowledgement had not been set aside.
So he was not entitled to court-appointed counsel to challenge the acknowledgement document, is that correct?
That would be the state's position, Your Honor. Statute has never been extended to court-appointed counsel in disestablishing paternity.
What's the rationale for there being a right to appointed counsel paternity proceeding?
Well, in Carroll v. Moore, the rationale was for various reasons, including to advise the defendant of the right to genetic testing.
Wasn't the heart of Carroll v. Moore that once paternity is established, you can go to jail for not supporting your child?
That was a factor in it. However, I don't believe that was the only factor. The case specifically cited to the needing to make sure that defendants were apprised of their rights to jury trial, to genetic testing, to be able to assist in the defense of that genetic testing. Carroll was at a time where genetic testing was not at the level that it is today. So I do believe, you know, taking that into factor. There has been case law since that point that does talk about the fact that the possibility of jail time in and of itself does not rise to the level of being granting that right to court counsel.
In Nebraska, is that right? Is there a constitutionally based right to court-appointed counsel paternity claims, or is it purely statutory, if at all?
In Nebraska, Carroll v. Moore found that there was a constitutional right in state-initiated paternity actions.
And why is that?
There were a myriad of factors talking about the res judicata effect of paternity, speaking to ensuring that the state powers didn't overburden the public. In a child support action where a paternity acknowledgement is signed, it's different because the state was not there present at the time this child was born when those parents of their own volition sign this acknowledgement saying that he was, in fact, the biological father of this child.
And at the time of Carroll versus Moore, there was no statutory procedure to disestablish parentage.
That is correct, Your Honor, yes. The statutes have come about since then, which does take away some of that res judicata effect that Carroll did speak of. I see that I am out of time, and I would respectfully ask the court to order requiring the county to pay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. White, good morning to you.
May it please the court, I'm Elise White here on behalf of the appellee, Mr. Julio Gomez. This matter comes before this honorable court after the appellant appealed the District Court of Lancaster County's order for court-appointed counsel and fees. While the brief filed in this matter lays out our position on why the District Court's order should be affirmed, there are public policy issues at play here that I specifically want to call to the court's attention. Namely, if the appellant succeeds and this honorable court reverses the District Court's order appointing counsel and subsequently paying that counsel, whatever remedy the court issues very well may have a chilling effect on court-appointed counsel for future cases. By the time the appeal in this matter was filed, counsel had been appointed for a party that the referee found to be indigent.
Counsel, was there a statutory basis for the appointment of counsel in this case?
Your Honor, the appellee, the first time he opened his mouth in front of the referee in the courtroom, said that he did sign that acknowledgement of paternity, but that he made a mistake when he did that. While he didn't say the magic words material mistake of fact, he was alleging that under 43-1909, that there was a challenge to the acknowledgement of paternity. Carroll v. Moore, as appellant accurately stated, provides that there is court-appointed counsel at the public's expense in paternity actions. It's our position.
That's a constitutionally based argument, isn't it?
It is.
Is there, but my question, to return to my question was, is there a statute that authorizes appointment of counsel at public expense in this particular situation?
Not in this particular situation. I believe that this may be an issue of first impression for this court. I'm unaware of any statute that specifically authorizes counsel in this position.
So, would you agree that either the Constitution requires it or it doesn't exist?
I would agree that the Constitution does require it in this matter. I mean,
those are the two choices.
Those are, you're correct.
That
yes.
We don't have a statute upon which you could rely to
correct.
Say, so either it's the Constitution, you win, or there is no constitutional right in this instance in which you lose.
Correct, Your Honor.
All right.
Is there, how does the case law factor into this discussion?
I think Carroll v. Moore is really the seminal case regarding the right to court-appointed counsel in a paternity case, as Justice Castle pointed out, as a constitutional right. Carroll v. Moore talks specifically about factors that caused the court there to say that court-appointed counsel at public expense was necessary, and all of these factors are present in this case. The appellee could lose his physical liberty in a later proceeding which arise out and are based on the paternity determination. The appellee may be liable for support and may be imprisoned for failure to pay support. The potential threat of imprisonment and the state-initiated paternity suit would be res judicata. And as Your Honor pointed out, that has changed since Carroll v. Moore was entered into effect. There is an ability to disestablish paternity by statute now. However, I think one of the very important pieces here that Carroll v. Moore really got into was that the risk in a paternity case, and the very real risk in this case, is the court might have found that the legal father, even though he's not the biological father of this child, would have an ongoing obligation to support the child despite his raising a challenge to that signed acknowledgement of paternity.
Now, if we fast forward to the end in this case, this is not one of those circumstances where you have someone who's not a biological father. It turned out he is the biological.
Correct. I still think he has the right to raise that challenge, though. I think that the challenge...
But that's what he really wanted, wasn't it?
He wanted to know whether or not he was, in fact, the child's father. And I think by raising the material mistake of fact as an affirmative defense under 43-1909, that opened the door for genetic testing to occur for the question of biology to be evidenced before the court.
So in this case, then, following your comment, the issue of paternity, the challenge to acknowledgement was made, and there's an order for DNA testing, and all the parties seem to agree that this gentleman is the father, and then they stipulate to that, and then they go on to the dollar amount.
Correct.
Is that how this ensued?
That is, Your Honor. And I, the problem that I have with the way that this case was postured is that the appeal on the issue of whether or not counsel should have been appointed happened months, if not a year, after counsel was appointed. And I think the fact that counsel was appointed, counsel takes this appointment with the understanding that the district court's going to order the county to pay her fees at the end of representation, and the party is under the understanding that they have counsel that they're not going to be privately held liable for. At the point that this appeal was done, the horse is out of the gate. At that point in time, what's the remedy that this court can have if they did find that the district court erred in appointing counsel? Because right now we have a party that the appellate court, that the district court found to be indigent. And so then is counsel supposed to try to seek fees back from the indigent appellant? I guess I would proffer for this court that the way who's paying and how they're being paid may very well alter how the case proceeds.
But let's assume that we throw in with you that once there was a colorable claim of paternity that was raised, that your client had the right to court-appointed counsel at public expense to adjudicate the issue of paternity. But once paternity was determined, wouldn't that right have ceased? In other words, at that point, there's no longer a danger of an incorrect determination of paternity. Then we're just talking about dollars and cents. So from that point forward, why shouldn't the court appointment cease as a matter of law?
It should, but the issue in this case, all that happened at the same time. There was a stipulation. Genetic testing shows, yes, Mr. Gomez is the biological father. Mr. Gomez agrees to not only a support amount that was negotiated between him as well as the state, but paying retroactive support, which, as the appellant pointed out, is an ongoing obligation. All of those things happened at the same time.
Well, surely the paternity result came back some period of time before the case was resolved.
Correct. And that would be evidence for the court to consider in determining paternity.
And isn't my point at that point is, why shouldn't the right to counsel terminate the moment those paternity results are received?
I would say that the paternity results themselves are evidence for the court to consider. For example, in Caesar v. Alicia, Caesar was not the biological father of the child. Court still found him to be the legal father, and rights are there. Genetic testing results are just evidence. There are plenty of cases where the legal father and the biological father are not, in fact, the same man. However, legal father has a specific right, has a specific duty under our statutes and case
well,
law.
Let me rephrase that. I agree if the results are ambiguous, you may have a different point.
Right.
But where the results come back, and they are positive and overwhelming, I mean, in this day and age, I don't remember what the specific results were, but they're usually in the
99.99%, right.
At that point, why shouldn't, the moment that is determined, why shouldn't the right to court-appointed counsel at public expense?
I think perhaps it should. But again, in this case, all of that happened at the same time.
Well, but I think there's an issue of timing that maybe we disagree about, because the result, as I say, surely didn't come in on the same day as the hearing.
And I think that in theory, that the state very well could have said, we got the genetic test results, let's go ahead and set this matter so we can determine paternity. And if the court would have bifurcated the issue of paternity and child support, then very well the court would have been within their rights to say paternity has now been established, counsel, you're dismissed, let's keep working towards child support.
Let's assume that, following up on Justice Castle's line, let's assume that the DNA results came in a nanosecond before the stipulation and so forth, and this court were to say at that point, court-appointed counsel would no longer be indicated, would the inquiry then go to the reasonableness of the fees or a submission of the fees subsequent to that time?
I think those are both issues that the state could raise at that point in time. I think that given your hypotheses here, it's probably going to be negligible in terms of how much. I mean, we're looking at the district court paying $75 an hour. We have a 5-minute recess between counsel being dismissed and child support proceeding. I don't know that it's going to be worth the state's time to raise that issue on whether or not that 5 minutes was charged to the county. there are no other questions, then I will concede the remainder of my time. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. On we go to the last case of the day, which is U.S. Pipeline Inc. versus Northern Natural Gas Company. Justices Miller-Lerman and Papik are recused in this matter.